Well, hello again, everyone. Welcome to the teleclass, Monitoring Emerging Disease Outbreaks Through Unofficial Sources. My name is Paul Weber, and on behalf of the co-founder of this lecture series, Dr. Syed Sattar, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Now, if we were in a large lecture hall, I would ask all of you to raise your hands if you receive messages from ProMed Mail, and I would think that probably all or almost all of you would have your hand up. It is a truly remarkable program. It was created by remarkable people, and I should say one of those remarkable people is a member of our teleclass faculty and a good friend of teleclass education. And also, the program is presently headed by a very remarkable man indeed. Aside from the grueling duties of being ProMed editor, Dr. Larry Madoff is also a professor of medicine at the University of Massachusetts Medical School and Director of Epidemiology and Immunization for the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. Dr. Madoff's research interests include emerging infectious diseases, travel medicine, and in particular bacterial infections. And during his many years at Harvard University, he and his team did some amazing and intricate research. If you get a chance to Google some of that, I encourage you to do so. It's a real pleasure to have him with us and joining our teleclass faculty to present on the topic, Monitoring Emerging Disease Outbreaks Through Unofficial Sources. So it is now my honor to present Dr. Larry Madoff. Larry.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you all for joining us today. It really is a pleasure to be here, and this is a way of reaching a large and diverse audience, and I appreciate being asked to be here today, and this is a very interesting type of forum. As Paul mentioned, I'll be talking about a number of things, emerging disease outbreaks and how we know about them. I'll be looking at the question of the use of unofficial sources, defining emerging diseases and what that means, and how we use novel sources of information, and in particular the growth of the internet as a mechanism for learning about emerging diseases. I'm going to go from the title slide to the first slide. This is shows a copy of two volumes that were issued by the Institute of Medicine, the first in 1992 and the second in 2003, on emerging infections, essentially. To put this in some context, in the 1980s and some period of time around that, there was a sense of what I would call triumphalism in infectious disease circles and in medicine in general, that particularly in infectious diseases, there was a feeling that we had conquered infectious diseases, that there was still work to be done, but with antibiotics and antiviral agents and vaccines and improvements in public health, that infectious diseases were simply going to vanish. And there were very smart people who embraced this idea and this philosophy. And then nature had its put its two cents in the form of a number of diseases which apparently suddenly appeared around that time. One notable disease that appeared then was HIV, of course, but we can all list a number of diseases, and one of the slides that I'll get to further on will show that. And so by the 1990s, people were beginning to realize that infectious diseases were not going away. By contrast, there were a number of factors that were perhaps increasing our risks of infectious diseases and our recognition that pathogens were going to be with us for a long time. The next slide. So what is an emerging disease? There are a lot of definitions out there. The CDC in the U.S. has a definition which I think is a good one, and it's certainly one that's it's reasonable to operate with. One whose incidence in humans has increased within the past two decades or threatens to increase in the near future. And if we move to the next slide, This is a map actually from one of those original reports, which has then been redrawn and reproduced a number of times, and this version is actually from Harrison's internal medicine textbook chapter that I write from a couple of years back, and it just shows some of what we consider emerging infectious diseases and where they've occurred and when around the world. And some of these diseases are what we would call re-emerging diseases. In other words, cholera certainly existed prior to 1991, but its emergence in a new location or with a new type or in a new population is what makes it an emerging infectious disease. And there's a number of other ones that you'll certainly recognize on this map. And this map is certainly not complete. There have been dozens of new and not new re-emerging diseases that have occurred during my career in medicine, and certainly are continuing to occur and emerge every day. This is a Roz Chast cartoon, which shows how the emerging infectious disease world has played on the popular imagination. And I think you can all read that, but this is the Insomniaplex, and the woman is dreaming about Ebola and saying there's no Ebola on West 33rd Street yet. And, of course, the bad dream continues, and there are bad dreams. So I wanted to talk briefly about two emerging infectious diseases and the different course that they ran in terms of their discovery and our knowledge of them. And I want you to move on to the next slide, which is titled, it was an MMWR report from June 1981, and it's titled Pneumocystis Pneumonia, Los Angeles. And this report, for many who will recognize it, was the first recognition of the disease that would later be known as HIV/AIDS. This was noted that five young men, all men having sex with men, who were treated for pneumocystis pneumonia at three different hospitals in Los Angeles. This was actually detected because the treatment for pneumocystis pneumonia at the time was pentamidine. It was only available from CDC, and the CDC and Los Angeles County noticed these requests for pentamidine for an unusual population. So this disease really became apparent, although certainly not named and its etiology not established for some time to come, but in 1981. Next slide. If we look at the emergence of AIDS, though, we know now, in retrospect, that there was AIDS going on in Africa by the late 1970s, certainly. And by the early 1980s, HIV was widespread in Africa and in a huge zone. And it's hard to imagine that that disease was not noticed by people in that region. We know now that a plasma sample taken in, next slide again, emergence of AIDS, this one is titled, a plasma sample taken in 1959 from a man living in what's now the Democratic Republic of Congo was now known to be HIV positive. HIV was found in tissue samples from an American teenager from 1969. HIV samples were found in a Norwegian sailor from 1976. And looking at the evolutionary biology of the from sequence data of HIV, it most likely transferred to humans as early as the 1930s. The next slide, please. The detection of AIDS and the discovery of HIV took decades. What if we had known earlier? What can you imagine the differences that might have made in the control and spread of HIV infection around the world, this global pandemic. So around the early 1990s, as we recognized how far AIDS had spread prior to its recognition, a group of very smart individuals were meeting. And if you look at the next slide, their picture is shown. This is Steve Morse, Jack Woodall, and Barbara Hatch Rosenberg. The photo is from 1999, but they met much earlier than that. And they were involved in actually the control of biological weapons was their main interest. And they had been meeting with a UN-sponsored group on the control of biological weapons. And they recognized, I think, two trends that were coinciding at the same time. One was the growth of the Internet, which by the early 1990s was finding its way out of academia and the scientific and military community where it had been born into widespread use. You know, AOL and CompuServe and things like that were happening, and people who pretty far afield and remote had access to email for the first time. At the same time, they recognized that emerging diseases were an important topic, and that the marriage of these two concepts, emerging diseases and the use of the Internet, could help with the detection of emerging diseases. And this was the germ of the idea that created ProMed Mail. The next slide just tells you a little bit about ProMed Mail. ProMed was born as an electronic outbreak reporting system. It began in August of 1994. At that time, it had about 40 participants that were members of this group that met in Italy, actually, with this WHO-sponsored meeting. And they exchanged emails about emerging disease events, some of which they had firsthand knowledge of, some of which were items that they found in the news media or were told to them by friends. And they exchanged emails, and gradually people heard about this and wanted to be included on this email list, and the email list grew. And currently there are over 55,000 participants in the system, and virtually every country in the world is represented by ProMed participants. ProMed is a moderated email listserv and a website. It remains free of charge and also open to anyone who wants to join or participate. It is moderated, as I said. All reports are screened by a staff, and their commentary and a context are provided. And we're still averaging about 7 reports a day, even now 15 years after the initiation of the system. And I think one of the main purposes of ProMed is to serve as a filter, that to try to determine or try to find the important news to pass on, rather than simply passing everything along in an unmoderated way. Next slide. So I'm going to talk about ProMed a bit and what we do, and I want to point out that, and I'll get to this in a little while, that ProMed is only one of many systems that are in place now for reporting and determining infectious disease outbreaks. But ProMed focuses on diseases of plants, animals, and humans, all of which, of course, have an impact on human health. ProMed has long espoused a One Health philosophy that human health and animal health certainly are tightly bound, and also greatly impacted by the health of our environment, our agricultural plants as well. So within plant pathology, we focus on food crops. Within animals, we focus largely on the interface between humans and animals, so zoonotic diseases, and also diseases that are important to, again, our food sources, so agriculture. And then in human health, we focus on infectious and acute toxic events. The next slide. So I'm going to turn now to another infectious disease, and use this by a point of contrast. And the next slide shows a ProMed report that was posted on the 10th of February in 2003. And it has a lot of similarities to many ProMed reports. It was a report received from a reader, Dr. Steve Cunyon, and he in turn was sort of passing on a rumor. He got an email and couldn't find anything relevant to it, but he had heard from a teacher's chat room that there was an epidemic of pneumonia going on in Guangzhou, and that this seemed to be a big deal. Hospitals were closing, people were dying. And in fact, we didn't know much about it. I happened to be on duty, ProMed. I'll get into this a little bit, how ProMed works, but there's a top moderator person who's sort of on call at all times to receive these reports, and it happened to be me. And I commented briefly on this report. We appreciated this preliminary information. We wanted more information. That's what the RFI, or Request for Information, in the title means. And we didn't know what was causing this. Was this influenza? This was in the setting of the first outbreak of H5N1, avian influenza, occurring in Hong Kong not too much earlier, and we wondered whether this could be an outbreak of influenza. Of course, what it turned out to be was SARS. And if you turn to the next slide, there's a little bit more details about what happened in subsequent days. An unidentified pneumonia virus has killed 5 people, left hundreds hospitalized. These are additional reports that occurred really the next day on ProMed. 300 hospitalized, a third of them doctors, nurses, and other health workers. Rumors that hundreds of people had died prompted residents to clear store shelves of antibiotics, white vinegar. Photos in Hong Kong newspapers showed people in Guangdong wearing surgical masks. And, of course, the response of the Chinese authorities saying that the disease is under control, it's not as serious as the rumors have said, the priority is to find out what caused it. And all of this occurred really within days. And this turned out to be the first public report of the disease that later became known as SARS. And if you turn to the next slide, you can see that this quickly spread by airplane around the world. And by March 5th, it had occurred in Canada. The first Canadian death had occurred. It was also occurring in Hong Kong and in Vietnam. And by March 12th, the WHO was releasing a global alert about cases of atypical pneumonia. And the next slide. I'm quoting here from a paper in Canada. This was a New England Journal paper, one of the initial reports on the outbreak of SARS that occurred in Toronto. And basically it acknowledged these kinds of internet-based surveillance systems such as ProMed and the WHO's own outbreak surveillance system as being valuable for detecting diseases occurring in other parts of the world that then could spread to new parts of the world. The point here is that you can't predict who needs to know what and when, and so we try to disseminate information widely and quickly. For the next slide. SARS went on to affect thousands around the world. There were nearly 1,000 deaths, and 20 countries were in the end affected by SARS. It was also SARS was also a public health success, and in many ways, because even in the absence of any treatment or vaccine, traditional public health measures, infection control measures, essentially, were quickly put into place, and the epidemic was limited and contained within a reasonably brief time. I think that this outbreak that occurred in the age of the internet stands in pretty substantial contrast to the pandemic of HIV, which was not even detected for decades after its widespread occurrence, and really wasn't even recognized until it had already spread around the world. So I think that we can point to the internet and the use of what I would call informal sources or unstructured data in the early detection of a disease outbreak. There are many features of this outbreak that I think are instructive, and we'll get into them. This outbreak, meaning the SARS outbreak, that are instructive, and we'll get into some of those. I want to point out on the next slide, titled SARS Virology, another way that the informal sector can play a role here. And what ProMed did was to establish kind of an impromptu bulletin board for laboratories around the world to discuss their early data on the findings in the SARS outbreak. So early on, scientists in various laboratories would post their reports on ProMed as a way of rapidly communicating within the scientific community what their discoveries were. And before the WHO could set up a network of collaborating laboratories, this was a convenient, easy system for scientists to share their results and their early data with each other without needing to go through a lengthy journal publication process or trying to just rely on one-to-one communication systems. So I think that this real-time collaboration via ProMed helped promote the rapid discovery of the SARS coronavirus. I'm going to turn to the next slide, which is a diagram of traditional public health reporting. In a traditional public health reporting system, data flows largely from the bottom up. So it flows from the public, from laboratories, from practitioners, through local boards of health, local public health officials, into national level ministries of health, and finally into world bodies like the UN, WHO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, the OIE, which is the World Animal Health Organization. And this information flows pretty much from the bottom up. And because of that, there are two problems. One is that it takes time, that information can take a while to percolate its way through what are often bureaucratic and difficult to manipulate systems. Secondly, each point along the way can decide that this bit of information coming to it maybe isn't that important, doesn't need to be shared. And sometimes there are constraints on the flow of information for a variety of reasons, some valid, some not so valid. But there are a number of reasons why a public health official might not want to let on that an outbreak is going on. It can be economic interest. An outbreak of cholera means that shellfish shipments shut down. Tourism is impaired. Similarly, national pride. People don't want to admit that there are breakdowns in the public health system or in the infrastructure, or that there's panic in their communities. And so there's an attempt often to constrain the flow of information. And this type of traditional public health reporting system lends itself to that happening, to the control of information at various choke points. In contrast, and I'll turn to the next slide, the way ProMed tries to work is by talking to everyone and reporting back to everyone. So we certainly listen to and look for information from ministries of health and from WHO and from local health officials and public health laboratories and other kinds of laboratories. But we also pay attention to informal sources like the media, like the lay public, like healthcare workers who can send a message to ProMed saying, something funny is going on here. And it's often that astute clinician, that observant person, who is the first to be able to determine that something is going on. And when that information is shared widely, it may be that someone else is recognizing the same thing, either in the same community or distantly. And what ProMed tries to do is serve as a forum for rapid interchange of information. And we also try to be completely transparent. We don't try to control the information, except that we try to vet it and to make sure that it's that it's from a responsible source. We don't want to be spreading rumors that are untrue or that could be potentially dangerous. Often what we'll do when we receive a report is, as in the case of SARS, ask for more information. We'll say, this is what we've heard. We don't know for sure that it's true, but if anybody can give us better information, please do so. And this is often a way of getting official sources to rapidly confirm or report out what they know about disease outbreaks, because the information is already out there. There's no longer a reason to try to contain it, but rather they can try to control it and put their own spin, if you will, on the outbreak information. So it gives public health officials an incentive to report publicly what they know. And the next slide. This is what the ProMed website looks like. You can see that it's basically a listing of all of our email reports. And each of the reports is a clickable link, and will bring up a full report. I'm going to turn to the next slide, and a little bit of a change of subject here. I alluded to this a little bit in my opening comments. The One Medicine is a concept that's been around for a while now and which ProMed has always really fully embraced. It's a concept that diseases occur without regard to species, just as they occur without regard to national borders or to geographic boundaries. They also rapidly cross species boundaries. And the One Medicine or One Health movement is an idea that human and veterinary health, and I would even extend that to plant health, have many issues in common, and we all share the same ecosystem, the same world. The next slide. Importantly, zoonotic diseases are a major player in disease emergence. And I'm citing here the work of Woolhouse and colleagues, who looked at the host range of emerging and re-emerging pathogens. And what these investigators did, and this was published in 2005, was to look at essentially every human pathogen that they could find. They identified 1,407 distinct human pathogens. You can argue a little bit about the numbers. There may be a few that they missed, and there may be a few that were overcounted. But in any case, it gives you a good sense of the thousand ills that flesh is heir to, as the saying goes. And they found that almost 60% of these were zoonotic. In other words, they occurred in other species other than humans. When they looked at 177 recently emerged pathogens, they found that an even greater percentage, 130 of 177, were zoonotic, that the relative risk of a pathogen being the relative risk of an emerging pathogen being zoonotic was 2, it was twice as likely. The next slide shows a graph of the breadth of host range versus the fraction that are regarded as emerging or re-emerging. Again, this is from the same paper, and there's a number. There have been a number of subsequent papers that have also shown this phenomenon. And if you look at the number of host types, you see that the risk of being emerging pathogen increases dramatically. So among pathogens that only exist in a single species, the rates are relatively low of emergence. When the number of host types increases, and certainly when it's greater than three, that the number of that the likelihood of emergence increases. This is most notable, by the way, for viral diseases, but also true of bacteria and rickettsiae and others. Viral diseases in general are more likely to emerge, be emerging pathogens, probably because the simplicity of their genetics allows more rapid adaptability, mutability. But among all pathogens, the same phenomena was noted, that the number of species, the ability to cross species lines increased the risk of emergence. So how has ProMed acknowledged veterinary health? As I said, ProMed's guiding principles incorporate this One Health philosophy. About 20% of our subscribers belong to a list that specializes in animal diseases. So we know that a large percentage of our population are primarily veterinary health people. Currently, four of our 11 specialty moderators are veterinarians. And over the time period that was studied in Peter Cowan's paper cited below, over 10,000 reports on animal diseases were made on ProMed. This is from 1996 to 2004. About 30% of these were zoonotic diseases, the remainder exclusively animal diseases. Those are still important, I would maintain, in those who are really only interested in human health, because that's where the next emerging disease is going to come from, and also because animal health is integral to our own health. Anybody who lived through the British foot and mouth disease crisis of several years ago recognizes the incredible social disruption that even a purely animal disease that poses no health risk directly to humans can do to the how that can disrupt the social fabric. The next slide. If you look at ProMed reports by disease category, this list simply shows the numbers of reports over a 10-year period. Our leading contenders were dengue, an important emerging disease, West Nile virus, which happened to break out in North America during that time. Foot and mouth disease, as I mentioned, there was a huge outbreak in Great Britain of foot and mouth disease that coincided with this period of time, and so that's perhaps overrepresented on this list. A little more recently, if you look at our outbreak numbers, we spend a lot of time talking about avian influenza in the last few years, and of course if we went more recently than this, it would include the new H1N1 swine origin influenza virus that we're covering a great deal of currently. But again, this just gives you a sense of the kinds of emerging disease threats that we look at and we report on a daily basis, and it's quite diverse. The next slide shows a print by Daumier, and I want to credit Richard Knox, who's a National Public Radio reporter, for giving me this slide. And it's a caution against focusing too closely on any particular disease, and I think that came to light very notably with the recent emergence of the H1N1 flu strain. While everybody in the world, including ProMed, had their gaze firmly fixed on H5N1, the avian flu, we were watching every single case and every outbreak and every potential incident of human-to-human transmission of that virus. Frankly, in 10 years, it never did emerge as an important human pathogen. It may interact with the H1N1 and cause a severe influenza, but while we were busy staring at that, from a completely different location than we expected and completely different type of flu emerged as the next pandemic. And I think this slide nicely nicely illustrates the point that we can't focus on any single pathogen or entity. We need to keep our eyes looking around the sky. I want to briefly describe how ProMed operates. This is just sort of a look under the hood of ProMed's system. And again, I don't want to focus solely on ProMed. I will mention some of the other disease outbreak surveillance systems that exist right now, and but I want to talk about ProMed for a minute and how it works. For those of you who do subscribe, you can sort of get a look under the hood. First of all, ProMed exists almost entirely virtually. The next slide shows a map of the locations of our staff. It's a small part-time staff. Almost all of our crew have day jobs and do ProMed in their spare time. That includes me. And we exist around the world and don't frequently meet in person, but do occasionally. And almost all of our work is done on the web or by email with an occasional phone call. The next slide shows an overview of our information flow, where we get information, how we process it, and how we put it out. And I'll each of these sections, this is the slide, the next slide, information flow overview, is just an overview, and the subsequent slides will go into a little bit more detail about how ProMed reports come in and how they go out. So the next slide, entitled Receipt of Information, shows the flow of information that comes from our readers, from media reports, from local observers, from websites, and these are either seen or received by ProMed readers, or they're actively searched on a daily basis by ProMed staff. I'm also going to talk at the end a little bit about a collaboration that we have with an automated disease surveillance system called HealthMap, and how they're helping us to actively search for disease outbreak information. But all of this goes through a single email address, promed@promedmail.org, and flows to the associate editor on duty, or top moderator. And that top moderator might receive 20 valid submissions on a daily basis. And that's an average, of course. It can be 10, it can be 100. And many are rejected. They aren't relevant. They're clearly wrong. They don't fall into an area of interest, or they've already been reported on. For whatever reason, they're rejected. Many are passed on as potential reports. And if you go to the next slide, oh, I'm sorry, I mentioned the sources of our information. And then the next slide. Some of our information falls into the category of what we call rumors. And rumors in this setting don't necessarily mean rumors in the more lay sense of the word. They aren't necessarily gossip, I guess, but they can be. What they really mean are unsubstantiated reports. And they can come from blogs, they can come from chat rooms, they can come from videos, they can come from word of mouth, and these all flow into our sources of information. And the next step is what I call internal review and verification on the next slide. The job of the associate editor on duty or top moderator is to pass on reports to subject area experts. And so we have a staff of bacterial and viral and parasitic and animal disease and epidemiologists and plant pathologists and entomologists, and we pass our reports on to these subject area experts who will review and investigate further on the report for its accuracy, for its relevance, and they will actually format the report so that it starts to look like the reports that you're used to seeing on ProMed, and they'll add commentary and they'll add both internal references, references to similar ProMed reports, as well as external references, reviews from the literature and so forth, and these all constitute the ProMed mail reports that you're used to seeing. these go back to the top moderator who reviews them and goes over them. They're also sent at this time to a copy editor, and a copy editor makes edits and fixes it into the sort of standardized ProMed format, adds map references at times if those are useful. And finally, these are sent out to our mailing list, and they're sent out to a variety of different mailing lists depending on what the content is, and I'll get into that in a few minutes. And this slide erroneously says 32,000 direct subscribers. As I mentioned, that we're now up to over 55,000 subscribers. And there are a number of different mailing lists that are based on language and interest of the subscriber. Also, all reports are simultaneously posted on the website, and I'll show you how the website works in a minute. So again, this is our website, what it looks like, and you can see that that email report gets up to the top of today's listing. This is about foot and mouth disease in pigs in Israel. And on the next slide, you can see that all of the reports are incorporated into a database. And this database is fully searchable by free text, so that you can then search for reports. And in this example, I'm looking for reports on Streptococcus in Massachusetts. And I click a search inquiry, and I come up with a listing of 8 reports from 1995 to 2007 on streptococcal disease in Massachusetts. Each of those reports can then be brought up in detail. One of the limitations of ProMed is that it tries to be all things to all people. In other words, we try to be indifferent to the type of disease report and the location of the disease report, because you can't predict when someone is going to need to know something. It was very difficult to know during the SARS outbreak that emergency room physicians in Toronto were going to need to be aware of this disease, and yet it was through ProMed that they were. And yet this global system has its limitations, because there are diseases that are of interest in particular to particular regions, and outbreaks that are of interest in particular regions. And so ProMed has developed a system of regional networks that have two purposes. One is to serve the needs of a region or a sub-region, and the other is to help gather information from that region to the rest of the world. And so we have a couple of networks that are established in Latin America, our ESP and PORT networks, which are in Spanish and Portuguese. These are co-sponsored by the Latin American Infectious Disease Society, API. We have an English language service that's based in the countries that border the Mekong River in Southeast Asia, called the Mekong Basin Disease Surveillance Collaboration. And this is a little bit unusual in ProMed, because members of this network include the ministries of health of that region. So some of the members of this collaboration are actually official rather than unofficial. We have just established an East African network based in the East African countries to report on outbreaks of emerging disease in that region, and a Russian language service, which covers the countries of the former Soviet Union and reports on disease outbreaks in Russian. And finally, we have a Francophone ProMed, which is focused on French-speaking Africa and sends its reports in French. Now, all of these services communicate with the main ProMed mail English language lists, so that we can collect information from these networks and also distribute information from other countries that may be of interest within these regions. I want to talk about our collaboration with HealthMap. HealthMap.org is an organization that we've been very pleased to begin working with over the last couple of years. And they map not just ProMed reports, but reports from a number of sources. However, this map I'm showing you here is a way of looking at ProMed reports in a graphical method using geographic information to find ProMed reports. You can circle in on a zoom in on a particular region, and each of those tags represents one or more reports, as shown here. So if we click on Massachusetts on this link, we can see two recent reports on Lyme disease in Massachusetts that have been posted, for example. And this is a way of looking geographically at disease outbreak and spread. Again, if you click on those links, it brings you back to the full report on ProMed. Just a little bit more about the collaboration with HealthMap. HealthMap has a web crawling capacity. Essentially, it goes out and it looks at thousands of websites every hour and extracts information from them if they think that they may contain information that's relevant to outbreaks. A similar system exists in Canada. It's called the Global Public Health Information Network, or GFIN, which was one of the pioneers in this field. However, that system is primarily available to official public health, the official public health world, and not to those of us who are in unofficial capacities. So HealthMap provides this service for us, and it's a way of finding and identifying news stories that are potentially of interest to ProMed readers. So it goes out and it looks, for example, about outbreaks of plague or West Nile virus or salmonellosis or influenza, and sends our moderators a compendium of those reports that they can then incorporate into ProMed reports. At the same time, the ProMed community feeds back to HealthMap and helps to authenticate and what we call curate those HealthMap reports. So HealthMap gets it right most of the time but doesn't get it right all of the time. Plague sometimes can refer to a plague of corruption, for example, or something else, and ProMed staff will identify that as such and discard it. Or the location might be improperly located by HealthMap, and ProMed staff will help to correct the geographic location of a report. And so this is a human and an automated system interaction that I think is really an example of synergy, where both systems can help the other flourish. So there are other resources. I mentioned GFIN. I mentioned HealthMap. I also want to mention a service called MedAssist in the European Union that is also an automated disease detection system that looks out on the web. By the way, I've been forgetting to say next slide. We're now on slide 50, titled Other Resources, Redundancy is Good. The Infectious Disease Society of America sponsors an emerging infections network of infectious disease doctors around the country who report on and who are queried about disease emergence. EpiX is an official CDC-sponsored service, which is goes to public health officials around the country. But is limited to two public health officials and reports on disease outbreaks using that system. The International Society for Travel Medicine sponsors the GeoSentinel network, which sends reports of disease that's identified in travel medicine clinics and sends those to other travel medicine providers around the world. WHO sponsors what they call a network of networks, the Global Outbreak and Response Network. I think that's what the acronym for GORN is. And the focus of that network is largely on response, so it's focused primarily on organizations like Doctors Without Borders and the Red Cross and UNICEF who are going out into the field and responding to outbreaks. But there are also so-called alert partners who cooperate with WHO on this and GORN on this endeavor. I'm going to show you an example of Google Flu Trends, a novel and innovative use of the Internet for disease surveillance in a minute. But one of the points that I wanted to make in this slide is that it's good to have redundancy, that lots of systems serve different functions, they have different strengths and weaknesses, and they serve as a check on each other. If one system is identifying an outbreak and it's not being seen by another system, first of all, the news gets out there, and second of all, it helps us figure out where our gaps are. The next slide shows Google Flu Trends, which is, a very clever and innovative way of using Internet search terms to predict disease outbreaks. What the folks at Google found was that during an influenza outbreak, and in fact preceding an influenza outbreak, many people begin to search for terms that are related to influenza. So people may go and look for fever or cough or influenza or vaccine. And using those search terms in comparison to historical norms and looking by geographic region, they are able to show that these search terms coincide and in fact precede a little bit the actual outbreaks of influenza that are detected by other methods. And so this is a very innovative and exciting new territory for what John Brownstein, my colleague at HealthMap, has called digital disease detection, the use of informatics to actually detect disease outbreaks. And this is one of the new entries into that realm. So I'm on to the summary slide at this point. I want to just reiterate some of the things that I've said, that informal sources of information complement the structured disease reporting system and at times are better than the structured disease detection systems. I should say at times they're not as good. And I think this recent outbreak of novel influenza was best detected by the traditional public health system. It was actually a public health laboratory that noted that cases of influenza occurring in California were of a new type, and the swine flu type, and that's where our warning of this outbreak came from. But in many other cases, the informal sector has been better and faster at identifying disease outbreaks. ProMed is one early warning system for emerging diseases that uses informal sources, and we combine rapid reporting from a wide range of sources with expert commentary and also provide a forum for cooperation among diverse groups, laboratorians, veterinarians, public health doctors, the lay public, journalists, public health officials, and others. Multiple disease reporting systems are good. They are complementary and they enhance detection. And lastly, I want, for those of you who aren't subscribers to ProMed, to put up the URL for our website, www.promedmail.org, and invite you to join a free subscription. And there's more instructions there on the types of subscriptions that are available. I want to acknowledge our supporters. We are a nonprofit where our services are available to all for free. Our participants and subscribers and staff donate time and money to make ProMed work. We've also been fortunate to get grant funding from Google.org, to have a great collaboration with HealthMap.org. The Oracle Corporation has provided us with in-kind support, particularly administering our website. Other supporters have included the Harvard School of Public Health, the Nuclear Threat Initiative, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Gates Foundation, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I'm going to not quite close, but come to a close with this a quote from the late Jonathan Mann in the preface to Laurie Garrett's book, The Coming Plague. He said, "We always want to believe that history happened only to them in the past and that somehow we are outside history." And this is just a reminder that the history of emerging infectious diseases is one that is continuing as we speak and will continue. And we are not as one of the authors of a, I'm blocking on her name, I'm sorry about this, said, The Conquest of Infectious Diseases, Who Are We Kidding? And was the title of her editorial, and I think that's true. This is some of the ProMed staff. We do meet face-to-face, the next slide, from time to time, and we met at a recent infectious disease meeting in Kuala Lumpur, and this is some of the staff members gathered there. And finally, I close with some references that you can turn to. And I think, Paul, that we do have a few minutes for questions and comments.
Well, Dr. Madoff, thank you very much. That was very well put together. And I'm glad you ended, or nearly ended, with the comment on funding for ProMed, because even though it's free to join, it's not actually free to run, is it? There's actually quite an expense involved in it. And ProMed has a fundraiser every now and then. How
Yes.
can people like me contribute to and help support this ProMed system?
And now a word from our sponsor.
Yeah, exactly.
Paul, I appreciate that. There's a donation link on our website, and you can go there, and it's very easy to donate to ProMed by credit card. It's for those of you in the U.S., it's a tax-deductible contribution. We are a nonprofit. And we do have what we call an internet-a-thon once or twice a year, where we send emails to our subscribers and ask them to donate. And we sometimes give away little prizes like mouse pads and coffee mugs for donors. So if any of you are so inclined, we always appreciate financial support.
Thank you. I have another question. On one of your slides, you show a map of the world where you have ProMed staff with various dots.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that there is only one little dot in the continent of Africa. It looks like somewhere around Cameroon. Considering the number of emerging diseases that come out of that continent, would there be more value to have more than one person there? Or
The map is a little out of date, and we do have a few more people there, and we are at the moment building two networks. I mentioned them briefly, the ProMed Francophone, which is a French West African network, and the ProMed East Africa, which is based in East Africa. We currently actually have two staff members in each of those networks and are in the process of building those, and we hope to have as many as 9 or 10 moderators in Africa by the end of next year. That's a project that's been funded by Google.org, actually. And we're very excited about that, and it is clearly an area that we want to build capacity in areas where diseases are likely to emerge, but where there's little formal or informal reporting structure in place.
Well, that's a challenge, isn't it? Because many of the diseases are well advanced before any formal network knows about them.
Mm-hmm. And even in 2009, internet resources are limited in those areas as well. So it's sometimes a challenge for our moderators in those regions to send us email.
We've come to the end of our time. Dr. Madoff, thank you very much for a tremendous presentation. I'm so glad that we did this, and I have a much greater understanding of how this whole process works. It really is quite an organization. Well done.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity.
And to everyone else, thank you for joining us as well, and we will talk again very soon. Goodbye.